Hi friends, welcome to the Mama.Wife Life Podcast. I'm your hostess Brittany, and each week we'll be gabbing, bragging, and unpacking about life. So grab yourself a drink, get yourself comfortable, and get ready to be inspired. Hi everybody, thank you so much for tuning back in to part two of the housing crisis that is amongst us. And I am here with my friend.
Hi, I'm Tanya, and I'm here to talk with Brittany about the housing crisis and housing insecurity. We've been talking a lot about it lately.
Yes, and me, like myself and my family, we are currently going through this. I don't know if it came across like that in the other podcast when we listened to it, but it is very much something that we are currently going through. But there are some people that are out there experiencing it much worse than myself. And I have Tanya here because she is much more involved in the community and knows so much more about all of this stuff. And I want to give you guys proper information about this situation. That makes sense?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly don't consider myself an expert, but I do a lot of work with our neighborhood groups and my line of work. I tend to deal with a lot of not-for-profits and charitable organizations. It really brought it home to me when I realized that it's not just about homelessness. We think about homelessness as people who are living on the streets, and we don't realize how many people are living in their cars, people who are living on their friends' couches, people who are, you know, living on a friend's lawn in a tent. Mm-hmm. And how many people, if they lost their job, how many people would be
homeless in like a month?
Would literally be homeless in a month.
Yeah.
And at the very least, 3 months, or this whole idea that you're never quite able to be safe in your house. I mean, you've moved how many times now?
So we've moved 3 times in the last 3 years.
And every single time, you've barely been able to afford your rent.
100%.
And it keeps going up.
Yeah, because we cannot find affordable housing. We cannot find housing. I came across places that were in our price range, and I didn't feel safe living in the neighborhood.
There is that, too. I mean, you've got 2 young kids. You walk everywhere. So things like having access to public transit and being able to be safe with the babies and stuff 100%. Like that. It's an understandable thing to be concerned about it.
And safe housing, because our first place that we moved from, there was black mold all behind the wall.
Right.
Then that's kind of what triggered us to move, because he kept coming in to fix it, and he wasn't fixing it. He was just caulking it up. And I was sitting in the bathtub bathing my oldest, and all I could smell was that smell of mold. And because for a long time, I couldn't figure out, why do I have such a headache? I go have a bath, I'm in the washroom, and I have such a bad headache because our washroom didn't have a window and the fan barely worked.
Yeah.
And when I'm in there with the door closed, I would just feel like garbage. And that wall was on the other side of the dining room. So that was like the main wall in the house.
Yeah.
And our hot air exchange was in that wall.
Okay.
So it was kind of just like everything was circling through it. And so that's what kind of triggered us to move. Right. And then we ended up moving around Christmas time last December. And we were like, this is perfect. This is great. It sucked because we moved around right around the holidays. And so we ended up having to apply for some help for gifts for our kids, because with moving and
Tom had some struggles with work as well, I think.
Yeah. Yep. And so we ended up doing that, and we're like, okay, you know what? Next year is going to be better. And then we moved into the house, and we kind of started to realize that our landlords weren't really prepared to become landlords. Like when I fell through their deck, when the basement wall just started leaking, and it was like, it was such an inconvenience for them to come and fix all of these things. And then they ended up basically saying, like, we weren't prepared for the responsibility of being landlords, which I find a lot of landlords aren't. I think that they buy a house, like, okay, we're going to rent it out, and we're not going to
charge. That's a really interesting point.
Right? That we're just going to make money, and that's just going to be great. And it's just, like, that's not how it works. Because when you have a house, you need to maintain it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's on you. So if, like, you get a leaky ceiling, some landlords will legitimately just like not care, and they won't do anything about it, right? They ended up selling their house, which completely took us by surprise. And then we had to move again a year later. And at that point, when we moved again, my husband lost his job.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. A week before we moved, he lost his job. And so we had to pay for our last month's rent. We had to pay for moving costs. And at this point, nobody knew what was going on. So we had to kind of like keep up this, like, because like he lost his job, but he was still getting money from another job that he was doing. But it wasn't something that was like, oh, every 2 weeks you're going to be, it was just kind of like whenever that check arrives or whenever they decided to deposit it. Right. Which is not a stable situation. Interesting
that there's a stigma, because we see stigma in homelessness.
Yes.
And everyone tuts about it. And oh my God, try not to look at the homeless people on the street, mm-hmm. that sort of a thing. But the stigma around losing your job in a middle class or lower yep. middle class sort of thing.
You get shamed.
You get shamed all, about it.
Oh, I can't believe you just it. Do this. Oh, you keep losing your job or what?
Yeah.
Like having, going and working, I find it's a lot different than how it used to be a long time ago. Like you had people that would go and work and they'd be in a job for
forever. Unless you quit.
And now it's like the turnover rate everywhere you go is... Yeah. ridiculous. So unless you're self-employed, you're not getting fired.
Yes. Which is one of the reasons why I love being self-employed.
Yeah.
My paycheck is very uncertain a lot of the time. I certainly don't live anywhere near lower middle class standards.
No.
But I also have the ability to, okay, I got to hustle more this week. I've mm-hmm. got to find more this week. I've got to make sure somebody's paying me this week. I get that a lot. I have to go and chase down money and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if I make sure that happens... You know, I own my own house. I was really lucky. I bought in at exactly the right time. So I'm very fortunate. I wouldn't be able to survive.
No.
I would not be able to survive with a partner, as being the sole breadwinner, primarily, mm-hmm. a partner who's been sick for a year, yep. who is only just starting to be able to work again. And having that kind of illness where with cancer, you have to, there's so much care involved and things like that, no matter what. I don't even know. I couldn't have held down a straight job.
No. And you wouldn't be able to pay $2,100 a month for rent.
Holy crap. It hurts my heart to even think about that.
That is the average rent for a house that is a full house, because you can get a place that's like $1,700, $1,800, $1,900 in our city, and it's half a house. You don't even get a basement. That's a half a house.
Right. And then you're still paying your utilities on top of it.
Yes.
So.
And it's just like, there's no affordable housing, right? And then there's always a turnover rate with jobs. So unless like you are self-employed or you're just like absolutely amazing at what you do and you can't be replaced, you're never fully ever comfortable or secure in your position ever.
Yeah.
And then if you, God forbid, lose your job and you can't find work, you get your EI and that's all great and fine. But that runs out.
Yes.
And so what happens when that runs out? Then you end up trying, okay, well, can I apply for welfare? Yeah, you can. Okay. But welfare isn't that much.
Oh, it's not enough for you to be in a $2,100 house plus utilities.
No. And if you were to get injured, the ODSP is not that much. You don't even get enough to rent a room.
If you can get it.
Yes.
If you can actually get ODSP, which can take years and years and years of and not so working.
Now the question is, and now if you're in that situation, how do you live? Where do you go? Oh, you can't
afford physio, so you're not getting that.
No.
And what do you do?
Yeah. And so then you get people that are on the street.
Yeah.
Right.
Or they end up, like I said, with this, this sort of, I will live in my car. I will couch surf. I will, drive without insurance, mm-hmm. And then sleep in my car. And it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. Sometimes people don't even realize it's happening.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's okay. He'll get a job really soon or she'll get a job really soon. And then it's like, oh, crap. Like,
people make you feel shamed.
Yeah.
If you come to them with the problem, it's almost like you don't want to talk about your problems out of fear of them being disappointed in you, which is just crazy to me that you can feel shamed or someone's disappointed in you when you're trying to come to them for like help or to like explain your situation.
Yeah.
Right. And that also doesn't help.
Or they don't know. That's the other thing that I find too, is that sometimes I talk to people and they literally don't know that there's help out there. They see help as, food bank, mm-hmm. and food bank carries an enormous amount of stigma.
Yeah.
Right. On top of it. But they're like, but that's not the biggest problem. It's like, well, my family would give me money for food, but I can't ask them to pay my rent. I can't ask them to pay my mortgage. People who are used to being able to pay their bills until gradually it sort of devolves into a, you know, it breaks you down until you can't care. Mm-hmm. Like you literally can't care. And I mean, I think I can share this, but when I first moved into Guelph and I had the house, I was lucky enough that I sold a house. And so I was able to then get a house here. House is all, you know, needed a huge amount of renovations.
I love this house.
I had a partner who wasn't able to work because he was a new immigrant. There was all kinds of things attached to it. And there were times where I could not pay all my bills. Lots of them. Lots of times. Lots of months.
Well, that's
what I was choosing. I'm like, how much can I pay to Hydro this month? And it's like, okay, well, this week I have an extra $7.35. And I would literally, like, pay $7.35 into it. And you know what Hydro thinks of that? Nothing.
No, they don't.
They are like, I literally had the collection say, we are a capitalist society. You understand, like, you use the service, you have to pay for it. I'm yes. like, I totally understand. It was like the worst thing that could have happened to me coming from a middle-class family, always being able to pay my bills, everything being okay. And then suddenly my life falling apart and I wasn't able to do those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
I remember lying at night crying and then one day literally going, I'm not crying about this anymore. It's like, so Hydro has to wait for their money. I don't have it. It's not like I'm buying lattes. Like, I don't have this money.
Yep.
And there was a part of me that broke and a part of me that went, they can't hurt me anymore. That phone call from collections is no longer instilling terror. It makes me feel sick. I want to pay them. But the reality is there's a piece of me that just, I can't care right now.
No, and that's...
Because I'm trying to stop my child from realizing how poor we are. I'm yep. trying to make sure that he gets to school. I'm trying to make sure that he has boots that don't leak. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make sure, you know, so I won't have a warm coat this winter. That's fine. I will tell people I'm not cold. I had somebody actually say that. They're like, I just pretended I wasn't cold so that my kid could have a coat, and I yes, didn't.
It's true.
And it seems silly.
You do everything, but you don't want to ask for help because people will make you feel like shit.
They can't. Or you feel like you should do it yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, you come from that sort of a family. You pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But I think people literally get to the point where they're like, I just don't care enough to even bother anymore.
I had people, like, low-key, like, kind of, like, you got your kids help for Christmas? I was like, yeah. Yeah, I did, because I didn't have any money, because we literally moved, and my husband lost his job, and I wasn't working, and I didn't want my kids to wake up on Christmas and not think that they didn't deserve something.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And they're like, you could just make presents, you could just whatever. Yes, you can. In the middle of an emotional, mental, financial crisis, sometimes you don't have time to knit them socks.
No.
You just can't. But that doesn't mean that, like, you wouldn't do it for another time.
Mm-hmm.
You took help that was offered to you that was there for exactly that reason.
Mm-hmm.
It was there for help. Because the people that actually offer that help are not judging you.
No.
Because they wouldn't give it to you.
No.
They wouldn't give it to you otherwise. They'd be like, sorry, I'm afraid this isn't the program for you.
Yeah.
But when they offer that kind of help, absolutely. It's the outside that they don't see all the things. Like you were talking about in your other podcast about the emotional struggle and how hard it is a marriage.
It is. It's super, super hard. Like when I was talking in my last podcast, I was saying, like, we have Netflix and Prime and stuff like that. And I have that stuff because if I can't pay that bill, it just shuts off. It won't rack up. It won't go to collections. It just will not reactivate, yeah. right? And that's why we don't have, like, cable and all that other fun yeah. stuff, because I'm like, you know what? There's sometimes where I can't pay my Netflix. I sometimes
Which
can't.
Which is really well thought out. Like, that's brilliant. And it's like I was saying before, it's like your podcast was very much what I think a lot of people can identify with and everything.
Yeah.
But someone might be like, oh, must, you know, like I was like, oh, must be nice to be able to afford right? Netflix yeah. and Prime and Crave and yeah. whatever. But it's like, of course, you know, they're a couple of dollars a month. If you have them, they cost very little for a great deal of pleasure and joy with two young kids and family and whatever. And I love the idea that if that's it, if you just don't pay for it this month, so you don't get it. There you don't get it. It's like you don't buy milk or you don't buy those socks. Like, it's just what it is. And that's a really sensible thing for someone to think of. I hear all the time from people. It's like, well, my partner, you know, lost their job or whatever it is. But, you know, when I called Bell, they said that they... you know, I'm on a contract, so blah, 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 you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And they're stuck, so...
And that's why I was like, I'm going
to
get these.
How many people think about that when they allow themselves to have an ongoing bill?
Mm-hmm.
How many people think of that as a possibility or as an option? You know what I mean?
And that's just it.
People don't realize it until they've gone into a financial crisis.
No, but I find that a lot of people that I know, they're in a financial crisis and they have, like, credit cards,
mm-hmm.
and that's how they... are continuing to keep themselves afloat. Right? Yeah. They got 3 credit cards, and I'm like, I have 1 credit card.
It's done
like,
it. It's totally
like
done it.
It's like a $300 credit card, yeah. And that's max. It's always max because yeah, I'm like, oh, my kids need, I have to get diapers, I have to get food, I have to get whatever, right? And that's just like, it stresses me out to think that there's so
many. And yes, she could use cloth diapers, but there are times you don't write. Please don't write.
Don't write. We tried
that. I'm a cloth diaper user. Trust me, I tried, but there are some things that don't fit into lifestyle. Don't write.
Don't write. People are like, oh, I'm going to send her in a message.
It's Guelph. Cloth diapers.
Cloth diapers.
Don't use disposables.
No, well, yeah. I tried. It just did not work for us. But I breastfeed still, so that's the thing.
She does, too. Yes.
So, but then that at least cut down on, like, buying, like, formula and stuff. My concern that I'm having is the amount of people that I see that are on the streets that you know that are that just need a place to lay their head.
Yeah.
And the shelters are like busting at the seams.
Well, and shelters are a one night solution. Yeah. They're not something you can go into and stay and have a home.
Nope.
They're a don't freeze to death tonight, here you go.
Yeah.
Right? Which is great. I'm really glad that they exist for people, but it's not a home.
Like, no.
It's not somewhere. It's a crisis, a desperation.
Yes.
For people to go so they don't die that night.
For one night. And then when I was talking in my previous podcast about the shipping container idea that they had, right? Mm-hmm. And when we were talking about it later, I said, like, you know, so we have these safe injection sites, which I think are great because, like, they give you free healthy needle, not healthy, but like safe,
yeah, right? Clean needles.
And then, okay. And then if they want to do these shipping container houses, okay, great. But there's a missing stepping stone.
Yeah.
There's a missing stone here that no wonder people weren't excited about having this in their backyard or in their neighborhood because they're, what is going to be there to help them like get themselves in a better headspace?
Yeah.
Right. That's kind of because I was walking and I see them and I'm like, how can I help them? Because like, you can't just walk into a rehab center and be like, I need rehab because it costs money.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and then these people that are on the streets, they obviously don't have money to go to rehab.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Right. Like they, and if they had money to go to rehab, they would have,
and then rent a room. Happen?
Right. Like they,
well, they would go into rehab and then they would, let's say they did have money for rehab. Then they come out of rehab. They still don't have a place to live.
No, because there's no affordable housing. That is the issue. And it's, I am scared for when my kids grow up because I don't know when this bubble's going to pop because we can't seem to afford to put any affordable housing up, but we can build that huge skyscraper downtown.
Yeah.
That's going to have all these beautiful big penthouses, which is going to be great for people that can afford it. But yeah. That's what then their
penthouse is worth more than my house.
Yeah.
Actually, one of their apartments is worth more than my house.
Yes. And that's kind of like, I feel so conflicted because I don't know what we can do and how we can help and how we can get a kind of like an eye on what's going on because I feel like everyone's just in a bubble. Everyone's just like walking around and they see them and they see someone that might be scary because like, yeah, I will admit that I'll walk downtown and I'll see somebody that is clearly having like a mental crisis or whatever. And it scares me. Like I feel scared because
we're not equipped to handle it.
No.
And right. We're not educated to handle something like that. So it actually is a danger for us sometimes.
Yes.
Right?
But I feel like the city has just kind of taken a step back from it. Right. Like I don't know how much the cops deal with all of it because after a while they kind of just get the same people or the same
calls.
Well,
it's like anything. We know that the city says there's no money. We know that the police say that there's only so many services that they can provide. They're stretched thin, that sort of a thing. I think like we were talking about this a little bit earlier about the difference between an idea and a solution. Mm-hmm. It's like the shipping container thing is a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's a missing step. The solution isn't actually there. It's like, here's a part of the puzzle.
Yeah.
But what do we do now?
Well, and that's just it. Like when you want to incorporate something like that, I think that there needs to be like a reason for them to get up, a reason for them to feel needed, wanted, appreciated, and involved in a part of a community again, because they felt so shunned and invisible by everybody around them that they need to feel like, they kind of need to be built back up again because, yes, they're adults and, yes, they've made some decisions or whatever the case may
totally.
Be.
Oh, totally. Crappy right? decisions.
Yes.
Don't do drugs.
Yes, but they now need kind of the support of their community, and I feel like their community isn't helping.
Well, and I think it's like you said, we see that mental crisis happening on the street and we're afraid. And fear is a natural thing because mm-hmm. we don't know what to do. If we knew what to do, we probably wouldn't be afraid.
No.
So how, as a community, can we do that? Is there some way, I mean, Guelph is amazing for how the communities can have wonderful solutions to things. Mm-hmm. So my community here, I mean, we're in the ward, which is wonderful. It's always been a bit notorious. It's very artsy. It's close to the downtown. We see a lot of the mental health stuff and, mm-hmm. and addiction issues and stuff like that. We've got the brownfields near us.
So and that's where you were saying
my kids walk home past the tent cities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That concerns me for sure. Of course that concerns me. But on the other hand, I've never had a problem.
Yeah.
So how can we do that? My community has an emergency clothing closet. They have an emergency food bank. Mm-hmm. It's a little one, but they've got it. They've got bread days. They've got a community stone soup market.
Yeah.
Which is not for homeless people, it's for everybody.
Yeah.
To get affordable fruits and vegetables, to get to share a bowl of soup with the community, mm-hmm. sit around and talk with the neighbors. We have the tool library. We've got amazing, amazing resources. Is there a way that our neighborhood groups can get
that's what I'm wondering.
Of the affordable housing solution?
Yeah, because when they were going to do these shipping containers, a lot of what I was reading on the comments was because it was going to be so far out of the city. Right? It wasn't going to be close to downtown to where they kind of need to be.
Yeah.
So there needs to be somewhere that is accessible to them that they can go to the drop-in center, that they're not walking like 30 minutes out to nowhere where there's no grocery store. Like, we thankfully just had a brand new market open up downtown.
Which is affordable.
I can go in and buy a thing of strawberries for $2. I can't even buy that at our local grocery store for $2, right? And so I think that's amazing, but I feel like we need to have something set up for them that's going to be, that has all of their support, but something that, like, we were talking about having, like, workshops, and because, like, that stuff can all be built.
Yes.
But it's a matter of finding the funds for people to do that, to want, like, how do we do that? How do we get...
How do you do that? Exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, and this is what I was, where I sort of came in with my idea that, why is it that I can't have a trailer on my property that can be hooked up to all of my services? I'm not allowed to have somebody live in that. But I can have a bed and breakfast that has, or an Airbnb that has, that is rented out every single night for 365 nights a year, but not to the same person.
Yeah.
So I can have somebody rich come in and pay to stay in my yard in this wonderful, colorful neighborhood and see all the sights and bring in tourist dollars and everything. That's great. I don't have this. I would like to have this. This would be cool. But on the other hand, I also made a list of the people in my general, just acquaintance, friends, etc., who are experiencing housing insecurity to the point where some of them could be out of housing within 30 days.
Yeah.
Some of them are living in friends' houses, that sort of a thing. Some of them are just having financial insecurity. And I can count 8 people just off the top of my head that I would trust in my house.
Yeah.
And then I've got elderly parents mm-hmm. who are more than capable of taking care of themselves right now. Mm-hmm. But my house has 2 bedrooms. I can't easily find them a space in there with 2 kids and, you know, partner, et cetera, et cetera. A little trailer, with all the proper safety things and the heater and the everything, and make it safe and nice and clean. You know, I have parents, and my partner has parents who would love an opportunity to do that and have a little bit of privacy from the rest of the house.
Yeah.
I have a huge property. The neighbors wouldn't be able to see it from where they are.
Yeah.
So it's not like it would be an eyesore. And honestly, like, I would say I could probably count 10 different people on my street alone that have, you know,
the same size,
that have, like, travel trailers or snowmobile trailers or whatever in their actual driveways.
Yeah.
Why does the bylaw say I can't do that? I could literally have a trailer where I could have a family of mm-hmm. 3 or 4 living in it.
Yeah.
Without it impacting anybody mm-hmm. From an eyesore. It's, oh dear, an eyesore. We mustn't have eyesores, must we? Must put the homeless people, our eyesores, somewhere.
Well, that's just, right,
you know,
it's like
we can't have you living nicely and cleanly in a trailer on somebody's property because of bylaw. Safe. But you can live
in a tent.
In a tent.
When it's minus 30.
Minus 30, yeah. It's ridiculous.
In a bush.
Yeah.
because you're out of sight, out of mind.
I feel that all it needs is a bylaw thing, kind of like our chicken bylaw, right? It's like you're allowed to have some chickens in your yard, as long as they don't cause a problem.
You
can
keep chickens, but don't you dare bring your parents here.
Yes, don't let your parents, don't let those baby boomers live in your yard. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like, yes. how many people would we be able to house? It wouldn't be everybody's cup of tea.
No, like, and it's...
And not everybody's possible. We have people in apartments or places where they wouldn't have space to that.
But the people that would want to do that, their hands are tied.
Yeah, because of a bylaw that says I can rent it out to strangers 365 days a year, but I can't rent it out to a family member.
And so, and then I think that then people would want to know, like, what do you do about when you have people that come and stay there? And what if they have addiction problems? Like, how is that going to be watched? And I think there needs to be a plan A and a plan B. And I think the plan A would be great for people that are just, that have an injury or they're just having a hard time and they need to, like, find an affordable housing situation for them. I think that type of thing would be great. But I think that there needs to be a bigger situation that's set up for people that need help and support and that are struggling with different issues that they...
Right.
Right? And so that's where I think that you were talking about, what's that field over there?
The brown fields. Yeah. Which I think somebody said used to be something called the Imico Factory.
Yeah.
I'm a relatively new Guelphite. I've only been here about 10 years. Our friend Bob was talking about how great it would be to have, for lack of a better word, like a work farm. It's like you have this space that you could have some smaller outbuildings. You could have a main structure that for people that needed a little bit more one-on-one type support or maybe needed to live with four or five other people to keep themselves going.
Yeah.
Something that would be a little more independent housing, like tiny homes and stuff like that.
And I think that would be great for like...
Fantastic.
Like, yeah, because then you could have people that still need to have, like, if they have injuries or whatever, and they don't want to live with people per se. They can be by themselves, right? But then if people need the support and they need to be kind of watched over, there can be an area for that. And then if they want to teach them skills and trades.
There could be vegetable gardens, there could be fruit forests, there could be all kinds of things. You know what we used to call these sort of things? You know, where you had, like, people living all together, helping each other, you know, farming, getting food, taking care of things.
Yeah.
We used to call them communities.
Yeah.
We used to call them villages. We used to call them tribes.
Yeah.
This is basically just a way of having intentional community.
Well, because I think it would make them feel part of something.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Because they've lost it. And like, yes, there's going to be people that are going to be struggling that aren't just going to be able to move right in there.
There will still be homeless people. I mean, this is not a pie in the sky solution.
No.
This is literally, there's options. We probably can't have one option that will solve all the problems.
No.
But these are options. These are some of these people. Bob is experiencing severe housing insecurity.
Yes.
He is not homeless on the street, but he is experiencing insecurity. And he's like, I would love it.
Because he says this would be fantastic.
He's a working guy. He's hardworking. He's like, I could help with these sort of things. He goes, I could build tiny homes. He says, I know people who would love to be able to
farm. Yeah, he named off like 10
people. He named off like all these people who are like, oh my gosh, if we could just get the capital or if we could just get a grant and just get the property. I mean, so many wishes. And the wishes all surround wanting a home.
For
like, that's it. That's all they want. They just want a home where they can, you know, lie down at night, be safe and warm, you know, straw bale houses, all of those kind of things. There's so many options. But it's absolutely shocking to me that is the greatest wish.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody wants a place because, like, even this room, it's not that big. But, like, this would be the size that somebody would need to put their bed, make them feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's, like, that's the beginning of, like, getting yourself out of, like, a mental health.
We're in about 100 square feet, in case anyone is wondering. We're in maybe slightly more than 100 square feet.
Yeah.
One of the rooms in my house. And it fits all the things that you would need to fit.
Then hopefully then you could figure out a way to, because like that would be like that would be great. We get people on their feet. That's great. But how do you then step out of that and find affordable, like trying to get introduced into the city when you can't get into a co-op because it's a 5-year waiting list.
Well, and that's just it, right? It's right? Someone was saying it was 2 or 3 years wait list. You were saying two or 3 years wait list for affordable housing,
and
right?
They don't have the, like, the city doesn't do, like, they don't control it. Each co-op calls the shots on their own stuff. It's not something that's run by the government, run by the city. It's each, which is just crazy to me, because I think that people, like, that should be a stepping stone, right? Like, you are in a, like, in a situation where you need help, and you need to find a place that you can live to get yourself up. And then I think that when you get to a certain bracket of that, like, you're taking take-home pay, not, like, your pay before, your take-home pay.
Right.
Then I think that then you should, then once you get to a comfortable situation, then you can try and step out of that again, right?
Maybe there needs to be help for transitioning that way. Yeah. You know what I mean? I have been fortunate in my life to be a homeowner several times over. I bought my house.
See, I would really love to buy a house. That's all I want to do, but I can't.
Well, it's not just that. Well, it's because it is, like, right now it's crazy. But my point was, I was always told how to do it. Mm-hmm. My parents were homeowners. My grandparents were homeowners. It was, well, don't rent, just buy a house. It's easier. And they showed me the difference. They showed me how to buy a house.
Yeah.
I've talked to so many of my friends where I'm like, well, what if you did this and this? Then you could actually buy a house. And they're like, we didn't know we could do that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's as simple as taking, like, you personally right now are not in a financial state to do that.
No.
However, I do know some people who are renting who they should totally have taken advantage of the housing market when they could have. All it would have taken was for them to go to a mortgage broker.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't listen to me, who would have been able to tell them what they needed to put down. They had it in their head. They had to have $100,000 saved up, and that there was all these things they had to do. And then they were, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many other ways to do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not an expert. I've just bought a few houses because, you know, I've never bought a house to rent. I've only ever bought the house that I'm living in and that sort of a thing. And I'm always amazed that people almost trap themselves into renting in some cases, not all the time, because there's lots of people, that's it, you can't afford to rent. But I pay less in mortgage.
Absolutely.
By a lot than you guys pay in rent.
I
still have to pay my utilities and everything like you do too, but
I pay $2,100 a month. I currently have a humongous bill for hydro and water, and I have to go downtown to, like, the, there's, like, a county thing to help me pay that bill off, because I'm like, I can't figure out
what if somebody was able to help you buy a house, because Tom's working, you can just barely, but you can afford that rent and everything else.
I would love to buy
a house. That's more than a mortgage is most of the time. So, like you said, it's a bit of a bubble right now. Is that bubble gonna pop? It doesn't in Toronto. Toronto has the same thing where rental is super, super high, but then so is housing.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the housing is still, it's not as affordable as it was, but there's still lots of affordable housing to buy.
Yeah.
So what if there was something where, like, you have Habitat for Humanity that will help you buy a house and deal with it that way? What about existing houses where it's like, okay, well, you can be helped to buy this house. Now, all of a sudden, your housing insecurity is so much less.
Yeah, like, in a city over from us, they give you a portion of your down payment, or they give you the down payment for your house, but you have to, there's some things that you have to bring too. And I called about here, and they only allot, like, 100 people, and they don't open it back up until that's paid back to them, right? And so, like, and that's what sucks, is, like, I want to own a house because I can't afford to keep renting because I'm paying someone else's mortgage.
Yeah.
And at the drop of a hat, they can say, oh, I'm selling my house.
And that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Everybody was all heated up about the idea that they could have a house and rent it, but they've got to live somewhere. Mm-hmm. So they're paying their own bills. They've got their own struggle. They imagine this house to be something that is going to make them a whole bunch of money, but they're not living in it. So, like you said, something goes wrong and they're like,
oh shit, I have to put a new furnace in the house. Oh shit.
Yes.
The roof caved in. Oh shit. Like, and they don't think about that. They don't think about it. Because you hear, oh, sink your money into real estate. You'll make your money back. Yeah. If you're going to flip them.
Yes. Or if you own, I've heard from people that if you own more than one rental unit,
Yes.
It's more affordable. And people are entitled to make money off their rentals.
100%.
However, a single rental, they're not, like you said, they're not getting enough if people are having too much trouble paying it. Mm-hmm. And then they sell the house. Mm-hmm. And they're selling it to somebody who is no longer renting, mm-hmm. right? Or yeah. has already bought a house before yep. or whatever it is. And that's really, really, like, that's a really telling thing. Mm-hmm. So how can you get ahead enough to be able to buy a house, though, if you can't even make your bills?
We can't. Yeah. It's a never-ending struggle, and I feel like it's just going to wait for this bubble to pop. Like, that's, I feel
maybe
like
have
this,
to wait. Yeah.
Like, I just feel like, no, I just, like, literally in my life, I feel like I have this bubble over top yeah. of me for the last 4 years, five yeah. years, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and something's got to give.
Yeah.
Right? I stay home because I can't afford daycare, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm home with my two kids, and so I'm hoping that once they go to school, then maybe I can go get a job outside of the house, but I also want to be there for them because I can't afford to make $15 an hour and pay childcare for my kids and pay my bills and get groceries and do it. Like, I just physically cannot do it because life is just too expensive.
Yeah.
Right? And so I would love to buy a house. And I was telling Tom, I said, like, I would love a tiny house. He goes, oh, well, you have too much crap. I said, I would get rid of every single thing in this house. It would yeah. be gone. It would be
because
gone
then at
in
least
a heartbeat.
You'd have it.
Then yeah, because it would be mine. It.
Yeah.
Right? But then, like, in Guelph here, like, I don't even know if you can have tiny homes. Like,
According to that bylaw, from what I gather, you actually can't.
Yeah.
You'd have to have a place that has something that says you can or something like that. But a tiny home is basically a trailer, so mm-hmm. I'm assuming a trailer park
some
would
of
let you do something
so
like that.
So, if you watch Tiny House Nation, sometimes they have houses that are, like, that are on the ground like this, and they just, they make it really long, and they build up,
yeah.
and they make it really cool, and I would be good with that, right?
There's some really neat things like that in England. I saw a lot of places where they had houses that were built on really strange-shaped properties, mm-hmm. Ones that, were triangular so that they would fit into, like, the corner yeah. of a spot. Their laws and rules are different. I actually really don't know very much about it. I'm definitely not an expert on that. But, of course, they're fascinating to look at, right?
Absolutely.
Who doesn't love it? Like, you scroll through, oh, I want to look at this. Oh, look at their cute staircase. It has drawers in it.
Yeah.
And I want all of those things. My house is not all that much bigger than the average tiny house,
yeah.
right? I think, actually, that's not true. A tiny house, I think to be an actual tiny house, it has to be under, like, 450 or
yeah.
500 square feet. And my house is, like, 850 square feet.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, most of the time in tiny houses, there's only two people living in them, too.
The,
right? Or they have little kids, like, you
yeah,
have little kids.
Because if you watch Tiny House Nation on Netflix, which is my favorite thing.
I've seen one.
There's
of
all,
them.
There's,
great.
Like, lots of different people that have kids and older kids and younger kids. And it's just, it's doable. It's a matter of all of the junk that's in your life.
You have to get rid of
you
the
junk.
You
have to get rid of the junk. And for me, I'm like, I'm pro getting rid of the junk because I got anxiety to begin with. And I find my junk causes my anxiety. It causes my brain fog. It causes me not to want to get up and do stuff because it just suffocates me. Right.
Right.
And so I'm like, I'm good with that. Give me my clothes. Got my kids. I got a TV I can watch Netflix on. I got food. I got a couch. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good because everything is just junk.
Well, and I mean, especially if you live in a space, like in a downtown space, I actually feel that tiny houses are a really good option.
Yeah.
Because again, like you have communal spaces mm-hmm. and parks and fountains and pools and rec centers and all kinds of options. This is another thing in England, in London, I have family in London, England, very small apartment. They don't even think twice about the fact it's small. They don't think that that's strange because they don't need to do stuff like stockpile 3 months worth of groceries because, I don't know, because we're going to get snowed in and our sled dogs won't be able to get us across the ice.
Right.
Like, I live a kilometer and a bit from a Zehrs and I act like every time I go, I better get 6 jars of peanut butter. Like, why do I do that?
I better grab six.
It's like, if I need, like, we're starting to eat more like, okay, well, we're going to go and get the things we need for dinner tonight, which is what they do in England. Now, they are steps
yeah.
from anywhere, right? Like, they have grocery stores and everything everywhere, so it's
yeah.
really easy. It was an interesting mindset. They use the outdoors more, so people sit outside
yeah.
and talk to each other more, like they do in a trailer park, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So, imagine that, right? not being tied to the fact that you have to be inside your own space all the time, that you can actually use the outdoor space.
That's just it, right? Like, I find it interesting. We aren't social creatures anymore here.
But we want to be. Yeah. We're depressed and we're anxious and frightened because we live
on social media. Yes,
but even 20 years ago, we didn't live on social media and we were still too insular. Thank you, 50s. That's, yeah. You created that.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Well, I think that we are going to wrap this up because my battery's going
to
die.
Okay. So much to talk about with this.
So we very well might do another segment of this, but I wanted to really get this part 2 done and it'll be out in the next day or so. But thank you so much for coming on here because I need to have somebody else to have this conversation.
Oh, I'm so passionate about this.
I know you are.
I worry about you.
I know. I worry about me too. So, all right. Well, thank you so much. And I hope that everybody enjoyed this. I will talk to you guys later. Bye.